Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we got an impromptu with Tucker Carlson. I was doing his show. They were set up at my other shop, and they had some time. So I said, why don't you just come over and jump into my studio, and we'll knock out a nice interview with you. So he was kind enough, and you'll get to hear all about it in a second. First, let me tell you about Simply Safe Home Security. Like getting commercial-grade security for your own home. If there's a break-in, they use real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account. That means police dispatch up to 350% faster than a normal burglar alarm. Comprehensive protection, outdoor cameras and video doorbells, entry, motion, and glass break sensors, all monitored 24/7 by live security professionals. Set up yours yourself, no tools needed, or they'll do it for you. Just 50 cents a day, no long-term lock-in contracts. Go to simplysafe.com/am. There's two I's in there. Do it today. Free Simply Safe security camera to help you capture crucial evidence for the police and help them get there 350% faster in dispatch. Normally, it's $100. Get going now, and you get it for free at simplysafe.com/Adam.
Adam Carolla is unprepared all winter long.
Well, Kimmel get Adam to get on stage and free ball. Totally unprepared with no material at all. He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
Doesn't know.
What the hell he's gonna say until you tell him so.
He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
Doesn't know.
Until you give him an idea.
Get your tickets for the show. What word awaits? He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
Don't miss Adam Carolla is Unprepared. Aces in Cleveland, Ohio at Hilarities on February 27th and Indianapolis at Helium on February 28th and 29th. And at Helium in St. Louis on April 10th and 11th. Get prepared for Adam Carolla is Unprepared by getting your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Well, we're here with the great Tucker Carlson. Good to see you again, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Your show is can't-miss viewing for me and the rest of the Carollas at the Carolla House. And the reason I feel that way is because I feel like whatever your opinion is, that's what we're getting via your show. You have ideas, but you have disagreements as well. Like, I mean, it's like you talked about, you know, you agree with President Trump on this, you don't agree with President Trump on that. And then I think that gives you validity in the space, because when you're saying something, it doesn't sound like partisan politics. It sounds like Tucker Carlson's opinion.
Well, it is. I mean, this is my 25th year of doing it, and I haven't learned that much. But one thing I've learned is you can't sustain falseness over time, and TV, radio, I mean, it does kind of reveal you. And I'm getting older, and I don't think clever enough to lie about what I think. And so I sort of gave up and say exactly what I think. And on the Trump question, I mean, I agree with most of Trump's platform from the 2016 campaign. And so to the extent I disagree with him now, it's really, you know, I'm kind of on the side that he was on when he first ran on the war questions, for example. You know, I'm suspicious of, I mean, there are certainly times when we need to go to war, but we should be really prudent about choosing them.
Yeah, and I think that it's insane to think that there's a one size that's going to fit all in politics.
That's right.
It would be insane to think if you were a Democrat, you would be for every single thing that's on the platform, and if you're a Republican, you'd feel that way.
Of course, and things are changing so fast, much faster than I think many in legacy media, certainly in Washington where I live, would like to see. They don't like change. I mean, they are kind of conservative in that way, temperamentally. They just – the system's working for them. They don't want to mix it up at all. But all of a sudden, I find myself agreeing with people I've never agreed with, disagreeing with those I once agreed with. I mean, things are really in flux, and the reason is the country's changing super fast. So assumptions that I had – I'm 50, so like 25 years ago – turned out to be wrong. Like, I was wrong about a lot of stuff, actually. And it's okay to admit that. Why wouldn't you admit it? You know what I mean? And it's interesting. It makes it, it actually makes it worth coming in every day because it's fascinating to see the change.
Yeah. And give yourself, everybody, the space, forgiveness, serenity or something to change and learn, you know, to, you know, when I first heard Andrew Yang talking about basic income and yes. You're going to give everyone $1,000. I thought, oh, get this cockamamie nut job out. Get it out here. And then I was listening to him and he said, hey, the tech companies are making a ton of money off your information.
That's right.
And they're not giving it any of it to you. So why not get some of the money from them if they're using your information and your person, as it was, and they're treating you like a commodity.
Yes.
And they're making money off of you. Well, then why shouldn't they compensate you for them making a profit off of you? And I thought, yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought of it that way.
And Yang takes seriously the central problem. This is what I like about Yang, who I know, is that if you have a society where normal people with an IQ of 100, you know what I mean, with like no special connections, can't make enough to have a family – then you're going to have a really volatile society that you can't sustain over time. You can't. You're going to be Brazil, and it's just going to become a really messy place. And so you have to address that. Is the basic income? I'm suspicious of the basic income, not on even economic grounds, but on social grounds. I grew up around a lot of people with inherited money, and they were all, not all, but mostly kind of indolent, unhappy, self-hating, insecure people. I'm not sure that you derive any joy out of getting free stuff. I think there are people we need to support in our society who can't take care of themselves. And I do think we have an obligation to them for real. But, you know, I don't know that creating a lot more trustafarians is going to make it a lot better place.
I concur. It's also, there's this notion that everyone's going to take their $1,000 and do the fiscally responsible thing with it, whereas many of them are going to buy lottery tickets and Yoohoo. I mean, let's be honest.
For sure.
So,
including me.
But the point is, I'm with you, and it's an interesting thing, which is everybody, right and left, mostly left, are drilling down on these people don't have enough money, they're unhappy, they don't have a shot at the American dream, that this, that, and the other. We're putting way too much emphasis on money. Way too much emphasis on money.
Well, you've been at both ends, so you know. And actually, I have too. So I know that being – I mean, you don't want to be deeply in debt. That makes you unhappy. It makes it hard to have a happy marriage if you're being hounded by creditors. That's totally real. I've lived that. But making a ton of money does not make you – like I've done it, so I know. It just is not – and you've certainly done it. You were like indigent. And then rich, and I mean –
it doesn't – well, first things first.
Yeah.
Your general demeanor does not change any more than if I took my 110-pound lab, Phil, who's generally a happy dog, overly happy dog. If I took Phil and I took him out of my 7,300 square feet in La Cañada and put him in 1,200 square feet in Van Nuys – he would be exactly the same. So, and if he started in 1,200 square feet in Van Nuys, and then you moved him to a palace on top of the hill, he would still be the same because that's his nature.
Yes,
most people have a nature. You know, you think about, I don't know, think about somebody like Bill Maher or Howard Stern or Jimmy Kimmel or whomever. They have a nature.
Yeah,
they were poor at some time, and now they're rich. The nature remains the same. So this notion of I'm going to get rich and I'm going to get happy or I'm going to get satisfied or I'm going to change my nature.
So true.
Happy people, I know many happy people that are poor or poorish people, working class. A lot of satisfaction from working. I've always said I work with a white collar group, a sort of digital group of people. And I work with a blue collar group of people because I do a lot of automotive stuff and building stuff and whatever. And the building side of this group, the group that works with their hands, the group that sort of gets up and puts things together for a living, always happy, always even, never agitated. never. It's the people that have money who sit around and watch CNN all day are the ones that are agitated
and
angry.
Well, so look at your own life. I mean, you could do whatever you want at this point. And yet you choose to build things, which is
– all the time.
Right. So – and I do too. Carpentry is one of my favorite things in the world. And I actually know a number of successful people who – I mean, Winston Churchill built brick walls in his spare time.
Really?
Didn't have to. Yeah, on his estate, Chartwell. That's because that's what we like to do. There is a real – not sort of bullshit, schmaltzy, you know, working with your hands is really noble. It actually is satisfying. Like inherently, that's just true.
Well, I don't think that you can live in a sort of digital world and maintain a level of happiness.
I agree with that.
I think it's impossible. You have to – it has to be – there has to be a tangible world. There has to be – it was funny. I was talking to Dr. Drew the other day, and I was talking to him about something that Scott Adams of Dilbert fame brought up. And he said, you know, you think about pharmaceuticals or alcohol or marijuana or something is sort of it induces change or alters, you know, your thoughts, your way, your feelings. He said, but think about if you're listening to sad music, or think about if you're listening to, you know, Katrina and the Waves, Walking on Sunshine.
Yes.
It changes your mood.
Oh, for sure.
So this external thing that comes into you changes your affect a lot. When you hear sad music, you become pretty sad. When you hear happy music, it goes that way. So imagine if you're just sitting in front of the TV or in front of the computer ingesting sadness and tragedy and, you know, global warming and the Mexican border and what's going on in Iran. You know, what is that doing to your affect? And then what's it doing to your affect if you're in the yard and you're building a treehouse with
exactly
your kids?
Right. Exactly right.
So please go out there and produce something. Put something together.
What I'm struck by is how this is becoming an aristocratic society in the worst sense of the term, kind of almost antebellum, where we look down on – in fact, we look down on manual labor to the extent that we won't even do it. We import people from other countries to do it, which has its own cost. But it also degrades us because it suggests that we believe – and in fact, we do believe that that's like beneath us.
Right.
We're cheating ourselves out of – and by the way, I'm glad that I'm a talk show host and not a ditch digger. I'm not – you know what I mean? I'm not pretending. But if you have no contact with the physical world, if you have no like act of physical creation as a regular part of your life, like you're screwing yourself. And but that seems to be the kind of consensus. Like I'm above that.
Well, you know, it's an interesting subject, and I think it's one that'll dovetail into this next thought. And I'm very interested in your thoughts on this because I know these are subjects that you think are profound, and you have a lot of good takes on them. So we were sort of wired to go, look, I don't want to go down to the river and wash my clothes. I want a washing machine that is going to free me up to X, Y, and Z. So everyone, we're wired to, well, we don't have to walk. We want to get in a car. We don't want to have to go chase down an elk with a bow and arrow. We want to go to the Gelson's or the Whole Foods and buy a filet. So that's what we're wired for. And that's why we have progress. I mean, we move fast because we're wired for that. You know, we don't want to take a wagon train across the West. We want to take a train across the West. Screw it. We want to take a plane across the West.
Exactly. Well,
screw Elon, work on that Hyperloop and let's get to Phoenix in 8 minutes. Like, you know, we're wired for that. We're wired for speed, and we're wired for, I don't want to kill that elk and I don't want to wash those clothes by the river. I want someone else. So we're wired for that.
It's
but
true.
Now we're at the point where we don't want to get up and go to the fast food place. We want to call Grubhub and have them bring it to our house. And that's starting to kill us.
Exactly.
But we're not wired to stop. We're wired to keep going.
This is what a million years of famine will do to you.
Right?
I mean, this is evolutionary biology at work. This is why we're fat.
Right. And we're also wired to say, why should I be the one on the ladder cleaning the gutters? Why don't I just pay that guy from Nicaragua to do it, and I'll give him $12 an hour, and he can do it?
It's totally
and
true.
Why should I wash my own car? Pay that guy $9.
But
he can do it.
It exists at the level of instinct. It's atavistic. It's like in our genes. It's
right.
Consume more energy than you expend. That's the biological imperative beaten into our DNA by famine.
Right.
And so, like, any time that we can save energy and consume more energy, it's very hard to resist it. It's
right.
Almost like the sex urge. It's like to procreate. You
sure.
Know what I mean? It's just – it's something that
it's
you're born
us.
With. It is.
Yes. And so we did figure this out as it pertains to the treadmill or the rowing machine.
Right. Right.
We're not going to go – we're not going to have to get in a kayak with Lewis and Clark and actually burn calories rowing. But we'll do a simulated rowing machine so we don't become morbidly obese. Or we'll have a treadmill so we don't become morbidly obese. We're not walking to the well anymore with a gourd on our head. We're we're simulating this.
Right.
And what I keep saying to everybody is, okay, we all understand that. We work in a cubicle, then we go home and run on a treadmill to simulate walking to the well. We need a mental, emotional version of this now. We're not focusing on that. We need the treadmill, rowing machine, emotional component of this, which we've forgotten about because you see yourself getting fat, but you don't see yourself getting depressed, dumb, and lazy.
Totally true. But think about the instincts that you were overcoming, that you're suppressing when you get on the treadmill. Like everything about your makeup wants you to stay under the covers because it's warm
right.
and safe and you're not burning any calories. You don't want to burn calories. You're born not wanting to burn calories.
Right.
So every trip to the gym is an act of – it's a victory
right.
over your instincts.
Right.
So it's just super hard. We shouldn't underestimate what we're up against.
No. You'll be tickled pink to hear about this. I was – telling you off the air when I was doing your program, I was saying I'm going out and doing stand-up for free every night, not to make money, but to get better.
Talk about a victory over instincts. I mean, that's...
Well, I live in La Cañada, and all the clubs are on the Sunset Strip. So I come home from Glendale when we're done with the day, go back to La Cañada, you know, have dinner, row on the rowing machine for half an hour, then get dressed, and then go drive down to the Sunset Strip, which is a schlep. And then I do it for free, and then I go home, and I get home at 10:30 at night. Now, I'm doing that to create that gravity. I'm doing it to force that upon my rich, pampered, and soft life. But the deal I made with my son, which is who has no New Year's resolution, who's 13, I said to him, every morning I throw myself in the freezing cold swimming pool. It's freezing cold and I throw myself in it every single morning. And I said to my son, every time I go out and do stand up for free this year, you go in the pool. That's our deal.
I
want you
that.
To start inflicting this on
yes.
yourself. You live in a world, you have a nanny, you live in 7,000 square feet. There's a movie theater in your house. You have a 50-inch TV in your room. We're going to have to start creating this.
Yes.
We must. You're living in the space center, and you're just swimming from room to room in the air. And I need some gravity.
Yeah, because
we need to simulate gravity.
All learning comes from suffering, all of it.
Right.
Right. I mean, the lack of suffering is basically just a reinforcement.
So I agree. And in my world – used to be suffering because I dug ditches.
Right.
There was no reason. It's funny, if you speak to any dominatrix, and you probably haven't, but I have.
Let me say, any sentence that begins with the clause, if you speak to any dominatrix, comma, mm-hmm. is going to be a good one.
If you speak, because when I used to do Loveline, we talked to these people all the time. I always said to them, you don't have any poor people coming in there to be stepped on or called a dog or spanked with a newspaper and told they were a bad boy. And so they're like, no. And I said, you don't have any brown or black people in there, do you?
Yep.
They said, nope.
No anorexia in Africa.
We have white, rich guys
yep.
who come in here and get this because the other guy's life is that life? I mean, they're being dominated. They have a boss who's an asshole.
Totally.
They got a hump drywall all day. They're essentially living the dominatrix life 9 hours a day. They don't need to pay someone to tell them what to do. They need to pay someone to get a massage. And I've talked to all of them. They said, you're right. It's just all it is rich white guys who tell people what to do all day. And now they're going to pay me to tell them what to do because they want what they don't have. We want what we don't have.
Of course.
Now, this thing that scares me about our society, and it's starting to worry me, is you're right. We are wired for the least amount of calories burned we can. And here's how we're wired. So we go from, I'm going to go out and hunt. I'm going to go out, you know, barefoot and just go hunt with a spear and bring the carcass back and whack it up and make a fire. That then gives way to, well, I'll go to the supermarket and buy the raw, uncooked version of the beast and bring it back and cook it, which then gives way to, well, I'll send someone else to the store and tell them to buy it, and then they can cook it in my house while I watch TV, which then gives way to basically Grubhub, which is I'll pay someone just to bring the finished In-N-Out Burger product to my house. And now, but where do we go from here? Well, where we go from here is I want somebody to bring a bag of In-N-Out to my house, and I don't want to pay for it. That's the next evolution. And the politicians are listening. The politicians understand. And the politicians are like, you know what? There's a lot more people who want free stuff than there are people or voters who understand just how dangerous that is and just how slippery a slope that can be. So the politicians who do nothing more than run a popularity contest. Let's see who's more popular. Well, if you're running for school president and you say, hey, lunch should not only be a half hour, I'm going to make lunch an hour. And school doesn't start at 8:05. School starts at 10. And school doesn't get out at 3:05. It gets out at 2. And for lunch, screw that crappy hot dog on a stick and weirdly shaped square or oblong pizza. We're doing In-N-Out and Chick-fil-A. Well, who's going to get all the votes? Who's going to win the student body presidency? That guy or that girl? And the politicians are figuring this out.
Of course.
And everything is now free. Everything that comes out of their mouth is, you know, free tuition.
But what comes after that? And what comes after that is we're all speaking Chinese because we're overwhelmed by a leaner, hungrier, more realistic society that seeks to dominate because all societies do seek to dominate. We only – rich societies get to pretend otherwise. We've been through this a lot through the course of human history. It's a self-correcting system over time. And, you know, weak societies don't persist. They get conquered.
Right.
And talk about lying. I mean, that is the downside to being rich, and this is true for people and families and whole countries, is that it does allow self-deception to, like, go much longer than it would otherwise.
Sure.
And you can sort of be like, oh, you know, like the warm bath can go on forever. And the truth is it can't because societies are by their nature expansionist. They, you know, a growing society wants to dominate other societies. This live and let live thing, which I'm totally for, by the way, is not part of nature.
Like, right.
That's not found in the natural world, live and let live. It's not. There's nowhere in the animal kingdom is that the rule, and nowhere in the human world has that ever been true.
Well,
so if you're not, you know, constantly seeking to remain strong, you will be eaten, period.
It's funny you say nature. It just jumped into my head. It's like literally nature, like just picture ivy. Ivy,
yes,
just goes.
Exactly.
It never stops. It doesn't
go. It's a highly aggressive plant. We don't think of it that way,
no,
but it is.
And it doesn't go, oh, well, that's the neighbor's yard. I'm just going to slow my roll. It just goes. It'll start going up the side of a tree. It'll go up the side of a stucco building. I mean, you let ivy go and it just goes.
And what does it do to the trees and structures it grows on? It destroys them, actually. It degrades them. It kills them over time.
Right. So that's nature at its base.
Yes.
Ivy is just nature at its base.
Exactly.
And you go, well, why doesn't ivy know better? And why doesn't it stop? And why isn't it satisfied with your yard or your fence?
Exactly.
Why doesn't it just stay in its own trellis?
Yes,
and it's like, because it wants all trellises all the time.
Okay. What you just said, that's like the deepest and truest thing about the natural world and about the human world as well. And by the way, that's not the world I would design at all. I mean, right. I would design a world in which we stay on our own trellises and sort of coexist.
Right.
But that's not what we have. And so the option is not, you know, do we have it or not? The option is, do we acknowledge reality or do we get covered in ivy and killed?
Well, nature doesn't stop.
Exactly.
People are nature and we don't stop either. And expecting us to do the right thing and just sort of stop is like expecting ivy to do the right thing
exactly.
and just stop.
Exactly.
It's not in our DNA. And we are going to have to work hard and fight against our DNA and fight against our nature, pardon the pun, on a constant basis.
Yes.
And we see the people who give in. They give in to their nature and they're 200 pounds overweight and they're watching 9 hours of TV and they're starting to get hooked on opiates and whatever they're giving in to the nature. It's so, you know, you just take something like alcohol. It's so easy. It's so easy to have a glass of champagne at noon every day. Like it's so easy to have a couple of beers when you come home from work every day. It is easy to do. And for a certain group of society, it holds no allure. But for most people, it's a very easy thing to do. It escalates very quickly. Or, you know, you talk to Dr. Drew. It's, you know, one Vicodin leads to 99 Vicodins in a very short period of time.
I've lived it personally, so I know.
Alcohol or
alcohol,
Vicodin?
Tobacco. I mean, you name it. It's nothing I mean, I know a lot about the subject and
yes.
I'm deeply empathetic to people struggling with addiction, having struggled with it myself, and I think overcome it. But yes, of course, it's like
it's easy. It's easy.
Very easy.
Look, there's nothing easier than swinging by In and Out and driving through every day on your way into work, on your way back. It's all so easy now. There must be a daily battle to not give into that.
So how do you keep kids growing up in a society where there's sort of no limit to getting your senses satisfied? How do you keep them from destroying themselves?
I do it. My approach to it is different than I think a lot of parents' approaches to it, which is I don't go in there and tell them, do this, do that, and do the next thing. I show them what I'm doing.
Yes.
I say, here's what I'm doing. I don't order Grubhub. Obviously, I can afford it. I don't do that. I go in the swimming pool every single morning. Dead of winter, steam coming out of my mouth, 48 degree water. I go in that pool. Every night when I go out to do comedy, I go into my son's room and I go, I'm going out tonight. I'm doing comedy for free. And then I walk into my daughter's room and I go, I'm going out tonight. I'm doing comedy for free. That's where I'm going. And I just go do it. And I'm trying to, you know, there's a lot of, you know, when we grew up, there's a lot of people, you know, a lot of dads smoking going, don't smoke.
Exactly.
It's bad for you. And
exactly.
The kid's going, well, you're smoking. I'm going to steal a cigarette from you as soon as you leave, old man.
That very thing happened to me and it happened to my – I grew up in a family where people used tobacco. I used it. I used tobacco in front of my kid. They used it. So you know what I mean? I get it.
Right. I want the, you know, do as I do, not as I say thing. And so I believe you're going to have a hard time saying don't – order junk food, don't drink soda, don't play video games, you know, respect your elders. You're going to have a hard time sort of grafting that on. My feeling is I take my son and I go, I'm doing comedy in Denver for 2 days. You're coming with me and you're going to see how this works and you're going to live this life and you're going to see that it's not that glamorous and you're going to see that there's an early show. And then in between shows, we go out to the lobby and we sell merchandise and we take pictures with everybody who came to that show. Then we go back, we sit in the green room for 20 minutes and we go out and do another show. And we don't get back to the hotel until 12:30 at night. And the next day we're going to get up and do it again. And we're flying Southwest. We're not flying private. And we're taking, you know, the cheapest Uber ride we can to the Burbank Airport. And you're going to see how this life works and you're going to see what it takes. And I do that with my daughter. I do it with my son. My feeling is I want to expose them to a life. I take them with them. I took my son with me to a construction site. One Saturday, I just told him, you're going to dig for about an hour. You're not going to dig for a day, but you're going to dig for an hour. You're digging a footing for an hour. You're going to see what it takes to do this. And sitting around and sort of pontificating on how life should be led while sitting on your sofa, it's fine, but it's just words to them. Yes. I feel like they need to see it and do it. And most, I think the example part of parenting is lost. I think there's way too much hire a tutor, hire a piano teacher, get this person to come in from outside, pay them, have them do this with your kids. You know, there's a lot of have them read this book or have them watch, you know, The Electric Company or Sesame Street or whatever, you know, have some other external force come in and coach them up. At the end of the day, when you think about your life and how you live your life, and you talk to any adult, they'll go, my dad was a fighter pilot in the Navy. And my dad understood that if you make mistakes, people die. You know, my dad, they don't do a lot of my dad said. Right, they exactly. Do a lot of my dad did.
Do you remember that Far Side cartoon where the guy's talking to his dog and all the dog hears is the dog's name?
Right.
Blah, 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 Daisy.
Right,
blah, blah, blah,
right,
Daisy.
Right.
I think kids are like that. Like, they don't hear anything you say. They just watch you like dogs. They mimic your behavior.
Yeah. And look, yeah. If they saw you smoking, then they'd think it was okay smoke. And if they saw you kick the dog, they think it would be an okay thing to kick
totally
a dog.
Right. And if they see you mistreat their mother, they'll mistreat their wives.
Right.
No, I think it's totally right. I dip tobacco in front of my son, Copenhagen, you know, on every hunting and fishing trip we ever took throughout his childhood, which, you know, there are many, fly fishing, bird shooting, all around. And my wife would always say, you should not dip that shit in front of him. And I would always say, no one's going to dip tobacco. It's something I picked up as a child. Kids don't do that now.
Right.
Well, it turns out they do. And it turns out that if you dip in front of your kid, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You cheat on your wife. Your kids find out they cheat.
That's true, by the way. But what's interesting is that you're a word guy. You make your living by talking mostly, and yet you have so little faith in words.
Well, I've not been successful in convincing people of things or changing people's minds through words. At least my batting average isn't as high as I would like it to be.
Right.
You do a show every night. You give your opinions on what's going on in the world, politics, and beyond. Your words are measured, and they make sense. They make sense to those of us who are sort of logic-based. And then there are other folks that are a little more hyperbolic or partisan or whatever. But then there are folks like you and Dennis Prager, for instance, who sit, you analyze a subject, you give a measured response or a take on it, and half the people in our society goes, that guy's a nut, he should shut up.
Yeah.
That's how effective your words are. At least half.
What influences me is how people live. When I see someone who seems happy, content, cheerful, with perspective, who seems to have longstanding relationships with other people that are deep and real, who has happy, successful children, I look at that person and I say, whatever that guy's doing, whatever he believes, whatever – do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like his
values
are, I want to emulate them. That's what's compelling to me.
I completely agree, and I had a little bit of an epiphany, which I've happily on record saying. I did Celebrity Apprentice, I don't know, 2013 or something, 12 or whatever it was. And, you know, Trump's Trump, and he's blustery and storming into the room, and he's in a hurry, and he's, you know, yelling at everybody. And I got a little bit jobbed by Trump and the task, and I won't get into all the details, but I got a little bit jobbed and tossed off. I had no real kind words to say about Trump. Now, part of the reason is you're in a relationship where he's firing you. You know, that's your relationship. So it's hard to have a, you know, it's not, you didn't crack a beer and go fly fishing with the guy. You sat in a boardroom and he told you what you did wrong and then he fired you, you know. So you don't go back and go, oh, I'm that guy's number one fan. But I came back and people were sort of like, well, what's Trump like? And I was like, you know, blustery, blowhardy, always in a hurry, kind of 1,000 plates spinning at once. And I said, I'm not really fond of him as an individual. And then I paused and I said, but I will tell you one thing. He has 3 kids and they're adults and they respect him and they adore him and they are very well put together kids. I thought Ivanka Trump was an I was so impressed by her.
Yes.
I was exquisite. I couldn't find the words to be more impressed by somebody. She was physically perfect, you know, put together, ready to go all the time, but spoke eloquently, had great thoughts and angles and insights. And I remember thinking, like, that person is a very impressive person. And Donald Jr. and Eric were as well. And they all had a great reverence and respect for their father. And not a fear, just a respect. Yeah. And I thought about, I said, when I came back, I said, well, I thought the guy was a douchebag. But anybody whose adult kids work with them, respect them, and have good things to say about them, I look at in a different way.
Exactly.
And it's like, I don't know how good a guy Ted Williams was, but his son never spoke to him, you know?
That's right.
And there's these notions of like, this guy's a great guy, and this guy's saving the environment, and this guy's doing this, that. And this guy has an adult son and hasn't spoke in 21 years.
I couldn't agree more.
What does that say about the man? And I believe, I have 13-year-old twins. If they at some point were 30 and somebody said, what do you think of your dad, Adam? And they went, I don't like him. We haven't spoken.
You're
in
a failure.
15 years.
That's it.
I'm a failure.
Yep.
That's what it
totally
is.
I totally agree with you 100%. It's all that matters. That's how you're judged. I'm a Christian, so I think that actually plays into the actual judgment. It's certainly how I judge people. It really is. It's about their relationship. I mean, I know people who are dismissed, who are, you know, famous people who are despised by the public, who have like very close friendships with, you know, the same people for 30 years. It tells you a lot about them. It really does.
I completely agree, and I'm not sure why as a society that's not factored in.
Well, but the opposite is true, and I hate to be political, but I have to be, particularly on the left, this whole idea that like, you know, make it global, not local. I believe the opposite. What matters is the people in your immediate orbit. And if you don't have meaningful, deep, happy relationships with them, I don't care if you're solving global warming or ending lymphoma or whatever. What's really important is the people who are put right into your path. Like, how do you treat the waiter? Do your kids love you? Does your wife still like you? I don't know. Those are the measurements that matter to me, and I'm not just being defensive as someone who's widely hated. You know, I've always thought that.
Well, it is. It's also an interesting concept of being widely hated, because I have some of that working in my life as well, and it's an interesting thing to reconcile because you think of yourself as a good person. And I think of myself as a good person. And there is no track record of us being a bad person. There is no felony arrests or domestic beatings or tax evasion or vehicular manslaughters or whatever those things are. Nobody has stories of me or of you saying, well, I hired this young gal and I told her, hey, you know how the game is played. You want to get to the top, you got to take care of the man. Like, there is no Me
Those
Too.
Those stories would be out there by now.
Yes.
For sure.
There's no Me Too stories. There's nobody. I've had conversations with people where they've said, you know, well, everyone hates you. And I said, you know, I've had the same guys working for me and with me for 20 years.
Exactly.
And if you don't pay them and you don't treat them right and you don't treat them with respect and you don't take care of them, then they don't come back.
Of course.
So you live a life where you think, you know, I don't think of myself as righteous and magnanimous and overly gregarious or overly, I don't think of myself as overly anything. I don't think of myself as overly generous. I think of myself as fair. My Mason-Dixon line is you have to be fair. And then if you want to give $1 million to whatever research, you may. But first, you need to be fair. And then you get slapped with these labels of like misogynist and hater and, you know, whatever, all the xenophobic and homophobic and all this stuff, which is an entire track record. You know, I come from working improv and theater and 99 seat theaters and Equity Waiver in Los Angeles. Best friends, many gay people. Never an incident, nothing. There's zero. And I live in Los Angeles. I played football for 10 years. It's half the guys in the team are black. You work construction. Everyone is Hispanic. Where does the xenophobic racist, where does all this fold in? And then where are the incidents?
People you've mistreated, where are they?
Where are they? Yeah. Why haven't they taken to Twitter? Why haven't they spoken to, why haven't they gone down to HuffPo and done a long form interview? So, in this vacuum of non-activity, how would you get this mantle of hater, racist, you know, misogynist?
The opposite is also true. The people who are constantly telling you how great they are the ones like Harvey Weinstein, mm-hmm. friend to America's feminist community, close mm-hmm. pal of Hillary's, mm-hmm. was literally doing, you know, things that put him on trial right now. Do you know what I mean? So like, yes. It's actually,
yes,
it's the Jimmy Swaggart principle. It's the people wagging their finger in your face telling you you're immoral are always the one pulling a threesome with, you know, hookers at a truck stop. I mean, that's true.
Yeah. Well, I've always said, remember the old Bill Cosby in his colorful sweaters dancing at the beginning? I mean, you watch his dance at the beginning of that show and you see his technicolored sweaters up there and you're like, oh, that looks like the happiest, friendliest, nicest guy in the world. And then you think, well, why was he dancing? You know what I mean? Like what sitcom, you know, Seinfeld didn't dance at the beginning of his show and All in the Family didn't have Archie Bunker dancing at the beginning. Like, why did this guy choose to wear this fluorescent sweater and dance? What was he doing? You know, why? Oh, God, let's see. Why the serial killer who painted clowns and dressed up like
exactly.
clowns.
John Wayne Gacy.
I wouldn't dress up as a clown. He dressed up as a clown. Why did he dress up as a clown?
Yep.
I think he wanted everyone to think he was innocuous and friendly and lovable. He loved kids. Well, he loved killing people.
Yes.
And he didn't want people to know that. So you're Harvey Weinstein and you're living this life, but you don't want people to know that. So you don't live a neutral life. You and I live a neutral life. I'm not out there marching with women and wearing a pink no. pussy hat or anything. I'm just
trying to treat your daughter and wife well.
Yeah, that's my yeah, job. But exactly. My job is not to then blog about it. My job is just to provide right. and try to treat them right. But Weinstein is at the tip of the spear of the women's rights movement, the Hillary and everything else, who then is doing this, which is so true. And yes, there's a religious version of this
yes.
that everyone is familiar with.
Exactly.
The fire and brimstone about the gay community.
Exactly.
And the next thing you know, we're doing the toe tap in the
totally.
Airport.
That's exactly.
At the stall. Okay, we get that. But do people not understand that there's a secular version of this?
Of course, because it's a human impulse. I mean, their politics actually are how they compensate for their own personal failings, actually. And so
right.
whatever they're accusing you of doing is precisely what they're doing themselves, and that's why they're accusing you of it. Do you know what I mean? So it's like the people are always like, oh, you're a bigot because you think illegal immigration is bad. Whatever. They're the same people whose lives are totally about exploiting poor people from other countries coming. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Yeah. They couldn't.
I've had this thought, which is, be curious what your thoughts are on this, but I come from the very progressive folks and, you know, what about the poor brown people and the poor black people and the poor everybody indigenous and blah, blah, blah. When they employed And my grandmother, who was sort of in the Communist Party for a while and was constantly talking about so-and-so and the poor brown people and blah, blah, blah. And my mom as well. When those people, the poor brown people, would come to their home to work, they would pay them the least amount humanly possible.
Okay, that's it. Well, what you're saying right now is...
I had conversations with my mom where she'd go, it's okay to pay this guy minimum wage to come to my house and, you know, build this cinder block wall. I go, you can't pay him. You get paid minimum wage when we work at Jack in the Box, Mom. It's $4 an hour. When somebody comes to your house and works, you got to pay him twice. And you go, why? It's minimum wage. And it's like the person who never stopped championing the brown people wants to pay them the least amount humanly possible. And the person that never stopped decreeing the evils of slavery is essentially $4 away from slavery.
Totally. Ask about – so I just reduce it to this, tipping. If you're not – you know, if you're tipping 5%, 10%, you're not allowed to lecture me about anything.
Right.
And those people always are. Ask any waiter. I was a waiter. I know exactly – you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had so funny because – At the end, you know, my grandmother sort of took this to the grave, which I'm also interested in. I'm interested in the Jane Fondas of the world that, like, okay, you're just going to ride this pony right into the grave. There's no, you're going to be just as wrong about this subject as you were about Vietnam. And I've talked to Dr. Drew about it. And he's like, a lot of people don't want to learn.
No, they don't.
And I'm like, why not learn something?
It's the most interesting thing you can do. It's amazing to. It's actually such a relief to admit you were wrong. I enjoy it. I'm not embarrassed about it. Why would I be?
Well, I don't even look at it as being wrong per se. What you do is you say, getting back to Andrew Yang, you go, $1,000 free for every citizen. I don't like the sound of that.
Right.
And then they explain to you, well, but here's how we're going to do it. And you go, okay.
Yes.
Now I feel like I've learned something.
I totally agree.
And I don't feel like I'm wrong. I just feel like I had this thought. And then I found – it's like saying I'm pissed at this person because we're supposed to eat dinner at 8 and it's 8:20 and they're not here and I'm angry at them. And then you get a text that they got into a car accident. And now you're not angry.
Exactly.
You learned something. It doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means now you know something
that
you didn't know before.
But don't you find that satisfying?
I do. I feel all the time – when I'm questioning something and I'm going, but why did they do this and how come they do that? You'll learn things just through questioning things. And again, it's not about being wrong. It's about not having information and then having information.
Exactly.
That's not wrong and right. That's I didn't have this information and now I have this information. If you work in sort of the mechanical world, you'll find that all the time. That's all. It'll be like, what's the nailing schedule on shear wall? And it's like, well, it's 12 inches in the field, but it's 4 on the seams. And you go, oh, okay, yeah, it makes sense that the field is 12 and the 4 on the seams. And you'll go, can I use vinyl-coated 8-penny sinkers? And they go, no, you have to use 10-penny ring shank nails because the vinyl-coated ones, they pull out too easily. We want something that's got the ring shank on it, and that works better. And if you're going to form, use duplex nails. That's the nail with like two heads
exactly.
on it
so you can
pop
pull
it out.
Yeah.
Right. And you don't go, this is how I nail, or fuck your nail. You go, please, I want to know more. How else does this work? Why does it need this? And why is the code that? And you're in that mindset of, I'd like to be a sea sponge that is bone dry, absorbing everything I possibly can. And I am going to hear things that I disagree with and I will reject, but that doesn't mean all of it.
No, but see, this is the beauty of reality as opposed to like Twitter. When you deal with reality, you submit to its requirements.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you have to learn, and it's great.
Yeah. So my grandmother, speaking of taking it to the grave, was explaining to me at the very end when she had her help from one of those poor impoverished lands that we always speak of. And she was like, you know, Delia wants a raise, you know, and you know, she's making $12 an hour, but she wants $16. And I don't think that, you know, and it's like, I remember, like, I'd been lectured my entire life about how these people have no money and how they're proud and how they deserve a better whatever. She's basically saying someone else should buy them a free lunch. But I always wanted to write this book called What Happens When You Become the Man. The person, yes, that was preaching, exactly, about these people not having anything her entire life is now in charge of one of them and how much they should get paid. And surprise, surprise, she didn't want to pay him.
Well, but that's the story of our whole country. You know, the people who were against the man became the man, and then they became even more efficient exploiters of the people than the people they replaced.
Tucker Carlson Tonight is the name of the show. It is weeknights. It's on at 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox. And 5 is when I catch it out here on the West Coast feed. I think I get the early feed. Ship of Fools, How a Selfish Ruling Class is Bringing America to the Brink of Revolution. And it's available on Amazon as well. And you can shoot him a tweet at Tucker Carlson. And I'll just say this is my parting shot with Tucker. Do not confuse him with other partisan folks who may be on the right, who you think are coached up and have a sort of verbal marching orders from the man. Tucker has his own thoughts, has his own ideas, is not told what to say or think, and you will hear those ideas shared on his show. You should agree with most of those ideas. You may disagree with some of them, but either way, they're his ideas.
That's a high compliment, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tucker.
Thank you.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. 2020 is here, and another year of Adam's Monthly Nut is about to bust. This month's shipment includes a Mr. Burcham tape measure, so you can remember the horrors of the jungle while marking that 2x4. A Wallet Ninja credit card multi-tool. There will come the time. You will save the day with it. A sack of Ozzie's famous flank steak seasoning, so you can make your meat taste just like Ozzie's. And as always, a bottle of your choosing. This $60 value is yours for only $25. Sign up for 1 month or keep the shipments coming. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Break. Viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Delonte West might be a name you recognize if you were ever a super big.
Well, he didn't need. No. I don't know, but does he need the D?
He needs half the D.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So, Whitman, my thing is if your name is Andre, our work is done in the ethnicity department. We don't need a DeAndre.
I would agree with that.
If your
that.
Name is Sean, then we need a Deshaun. You see what I mean? So I got no problem with the Deshauns, but the Andres save the D's for Todd Gurley. Then we get the Todd Gurley.
You'd be amazed. Sometimes the addition of just one consonant and one vowel
right.
can change everything in your day.
So this is
Delonte.
Delonte.
Yeah, he played for everyone. He was a Celtics, Supersonics, Cavaliers, Mavericks.
Athlete?
Yeah, former NBA player.
Uh-huh.
And he has had his share of troubles over the past 10 years, really fallen on some bad times. Now fans and some NBA players are begging the NBA to help him out. The 36-year-old...
Oh, the homeless.
Yeah, 36-year-old in recent years has been begging for money on the streets. Appears in a new video, which shows him getting beaten up. I'm not going to show you that video. In the middle of the street in D.C. by an unknown attacker. That one's pretty brutal. But another video, apparently taken after the beatdown, shows him sitting on the curb, handcuffed, and ranting about some guy coming up to him with a gun. Many people are asking for the NBA to intervene. it becomes a little bit unintelligible at the end, but here's the video.
You know, I don't know how the apocalypse works, but I got to turn on, I got to hop on Twitter and watch videos of like homeless people raping other homeless people. That was a video that was on she's being raped. And then the guy who shows up next starts beating on her because that's her boyfriend and wants to know why she's being raped. Like at some point, here's my point to all the mayors and all the cities and all the governors and all the states. What shall we have? Just human sacrifice, like literally throwing fetuses into volcanoes? Like where do we have to get to before there's some serious intervention here?
Tell us now where the line is.
People are being just beaten and raped, and there's scurvy and typhus and everything's bad. We're medieval times now.
I try to be a voice of reason.
Right.
The conflicts are as old as time. Right. You know, I got a problem with you and you insulted my girlfriend, period. The responses to the offense are what seem to take it over the line.
Well, like someone else shot me, everyone just tweets me junk, but it's like what a lot of these businesses in L.A., imagine, I mean, you're just running a business. They run a uniform that you sell uniforms, you know, and you're in downtown or you're wherever. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, there's just tents and crap and syringes and junk. It's just everywhere. And you have like female employees everyone's got to walk on the street and they're getting this crazy man, you know, the store. The guy owns a business going, I had kids coming in here. Guy was masturbating like on the sidewalk. So he puts up a fence. You know, he gets a temp fence to put down the sidewalk or a shrub or a potted plant or something. And of course, the city's on that. Like the city's like, hey, man, you're going to get you didn't pull a permit for this fence. This fence isn't permitted. You're going to have to pay $250. Of course, there's Johnny on the spot with the permits when the guy's trying to run a business. His sidewalk is literally filled with tents and fecal matter and syringes, and he's trying to run a business.
I saw a story. I'm sorry, Brian.
Oh, I was only going to say on that note, help me out here, guys, because I forget the term, but there's even like Twitter accounts that like document it. It's called like aggressive architecture, or it's called.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you put like a railing in the middle of a bench.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You put like little bumps like on like your cement.
That's
your
what
slab,
I said.
And it's like, I don't want people sleeping there.
I made a note that said, look, they put those spike strips on the cement rails so the guys can't do the skateboarding down it. And they take a park bench, they put a divider in the middle of it. This is a guy with a business owner. He would love if the city, he pays a ton in taxes and property taxes. He would love it if the city did their job, but the city won't do their job. So at his own expense, he gets the potted plants and the shrubs and the fence and he does his thing. And then the city shows up and goes, that's a violation.
To the point you made earlier, I saw a story the other day that in Los Angeles, the murder rate is down for a couple of years in a row. And the only area of the city where the murder rate is up is among the homeless population, homeless people being murdered. And then this, more than 50% of the cases of murdered homeless people, the murderer is another homeless person.
Yeah, of course. I mean, how could it go any other way? I'm sorry, Gina.
This is the video taken after he got beaten up, and it just kind of derails when he's talking to the guy.
Assassination on my life.
What?
Man,
why'd you hit him? Did he attack you first? Was it off the fence, or did you hit him?
Man, I walked down the street. The man approached me with an eye bug with a gun.
He approached you, where's his gun at?
I don't give a fuck.
Okay. You know where his gun is?
I don't give a fuck.
Okay.
Young champ. I'm the leader of the motherfucker. Goddamn Navy SEALs. And the Army. And the Navy. I'm the motherfucking President Trump. I'm the real fucking president.
Okay.
I'm at the leader. All the gangs.
Let me ask this. They have drunk driving, and you can get drunk driving for riding a beach cruiser drunk.
That's right.
And you can get for riding a horse drunk, and you can get public intoxication. All right, so if you're just fucking out of your bean and you're in public, isn't that grounds? You'd be arrested for being out of your bean on booze. Why not out of your bean?
He is handcuffed in that video. So something may have happened after. But his brother, Dimitri, has said that he claims these are mental health issues. As far as the family knows, not drug related. The family has tried to, according to them, intervene over and over and over. Sure. And it's just not happening.
Yeah,
and it's not sticking.
Look, I think that's... everybody who sleeps on the street has mental issues. That's it. It could be a 2 out of 10, but it's on the scale. You do not put your head down on the sidewalk if you don't have issues. And you have to have issues because you don't make it to 8. Let's just do our hypothetical. You know, the average age of these guys, it's not 17, it's 44. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a run. You had wives and kids and family and friends and coworkers and whatever it is. You make it to the edge. And like, when they do this thing where it's like, a lot of these people don't have anywhere to go. If everyone walked home tonight or drove home tonight, tried to get in the front door, it was locked, went out to the car, had the keys gone and had no wallet, you would still find a place to sleep tonight. You would have, because you have relationships. You know people. There's human beings. Even people that you wouldn't call your friend if you knocked on their door and said, hey man, it's freezing outside. I need to do a little sofa service. You'd make it tonight. And then you could reboot. But the point is you make it to 40-something, 50-something, 60-something, and you don't have relationships. It's not like, oh, he lost his job. Yeah, everyone loses their job. What I'm saying is where's your buddy? Obviously, there's a huge mental component here because normally, as people progress through life, they pick up friends, they have relationships. Yeah. I mean, think about the literally hundreds of people where places you could go that are way outside of your family. Right. Yeah. Outside your family.
Community.
Anyone in this building would let anyone else in this building crash out on their sofa or spend the night in their guest room or whatever
within it is. In the movie theater.
Yeah. Within reason. Yeah. Right. So, obviously, there's something going on. Now, even if it's not full-blown schizophrenia, it is something. Yeah. You have led a life where you magically get to 50 and you know nobody.
Well, it seems obvious to me that whoever the 44-year-old you're talking about has burned so many bridges over so many times.
You're right. That's, you know what I mean? But that's where the bipolar comes in, or that's where the drugs come in, or that's my argument. Right. You did something. There's something going on that there's nobody in your world.
May I?
Yes.
From the other side here, say that granted, I think I know you're right that in a certain percentage, there's extreme mental illness or emotional illness, mental disease. But why, when we talk about those folks, do we say things like they burned their bridges? If they are ill, if there is a chemical imbalance in their brain, if they're sick, we would certainly not say that about someone with heart disease.
No, what I'm not saying they severely schizophrenic people burn their bridges. Severely, I have my brother-in-law's this way. He's been this way since 19. You know, kicks in at 19. He's probably 60 now. You know, he's needed help his entire life. Unemployable. It's a crazy thing. One minute you're at the top of your class at CSUN going for your engineering degree, and next thing you know, you're screaming in the middle of the night and you're seeing things, and he's unemployable. He cannot function. But his family has circled the wagons, they make sure he gets his medication, and he lives above the garage of his younger brother, House Dean, out in like Simi Valley, where everyone chips in, everyone takes shifts, everyone takes care of Dave. So I get it. What I'm saying is there's a lot of argument that a lot of these people don't have problems. They simply are sleeping on the street. My argument is you do have a problem. If you made it to 44 and the factory closed down and two nights later you're on the street, you do have a problem.
You're right. The image itself makes that point.
Yeah, well, this one for sure. Yeah. All right, so whatever, Gina.
Well, here's a happier story. Yes. Tim Tebow, mazel tov.
He's on the street too?
He is quite off the street, quite off Virgin
Hernandez,
Avenue.
Him and Aaron Hernandez went different directions.
From the Florida team?
After college.
By the way, that Netflix docuseries is great. I started in episode 2.
How can it not?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Although, of course, now there's headlines saying it's very hard on Odin Lloyd's family and, you know, how could they make this? And I get that too. But as a just watching the doc, it's very, very riveting. Tim's married, 32 years old. He took a vow of celibacy, if you remember. He wed Miss Universe 2017, Demi Leigh Nell Peters, in an intimate sunset ceremony in Cape Town, South Africa. The former virgin quarterback tells People magazine, quote, "I've been waiting my entire life for someone special who I could spend the rest of my life with."
He's going to go off like, you know, those science fair chicks where they take like the white vinegar and they got the seltzer bottle with the
volcano,
with the explosion.
Yeah. And they go, they put the goggles on.
That, and
they
just everyone take a step back.
Step back. And they just, boom.
Some explosions have proved to be worse than others in that environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he says, "I'm now marrying Demi. I can't wait to see our what the future holds. All my dreams have come true. 100% worth the wait." A few years back, another Miss Universe, Olivia Culpo, reportedly broke up with Tebow because he wouldn't have sex with her.
Not a story you hear every day.
No, it's not.
No. So is that two Miss Universe or like a Miss World and a Miss Universe?
That's two Miss Universe.
Making him Mr. Galaxy.
That's right.
Wow.
He's a Trump on a time. Yeah.
Most of us will make it to 75 without fucking one Miss Universe winner.
Yeah.
Yet.
Let alone two.
Let alone
early
30s. With two.
And they both won. I mean, to be a competitor, you know, they always, you know, watch the Oscars. Yeah.
Also, it's got to be weird when you're trying to set him up. Like, oh, she's a beauty. She was Miss Atlanta.
that's sweet. Also, yes,
That's cute.
You're into that. You're trading down.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Do they even... I now feel we're at the point where if you're a chick and you're above an 8.5, you could just call yourself Miss Universe Winner 2013. And, like, no normal person would be able to call you out.
That's right.
I would have to say you're right. I would even bring the number down from 8.5 because I do watch. Obviously, I don't watch many movies, but I do watch these beauty pageants.
Right.
I am telling you what I'm seeing today as the, air quotes, winner is just looking at it, even muted, is very different than what the winner.
Well,
oh, it's absolutely,
this is
absolutely.
This is the unintended consequences of focusing on the mind.
Well, of course.
The talent competition.
And eliminating the bikini competition.
And by the way, the verdict was in when they had that one. It was Trump. I think it was Trump's thing, you know. Show them a map and see what happens. It'll be great. Like, they'll get really, they'll give you great geographical responses. And the one is saying, you know, the Iraq. And it's right. Like, okay.
And such as.
All right.
I love it.
The
such
game's
as
over.
The Iraq.
Yeah, such as the Iraq. And the, she said.
They don't have maps.
That
there.
Was the solution. That was the problem, at least. It was more maps.
I want one of them to be, like, ballsy enough to go, like, all right, fine. I butchered mine. Mario Lopez, let me ask you. The Electoral College. Really convince me that we should get rid of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Change my mind.
Because Mario's fucking face just turned goes white, right? Like,
I think that's great. I mean, I was watching from the booth, and that one really, I don't like the popular vote thing, but when Mario was like so caught off guard, but he's a great guy. One of the great Latino guys.
I mean,
really
super articulated. He's
absolutely
clean.
Absolutely. He's what you really want.
That's
you know,
what you want.
That's what you want. Because
not one of those MS-13ers.
They're not all bad. I mean, they're not all bad.
They're not all bad.
I never said they were all bad.
Some of them are rapists.
Well, look, some are rapists and murderers. Some will shiv your grandmother.
Right. But not Lopez.
Not Lopez. I mean, he just wants to tell you what Scarlett Johansson had for dinner. And that, I think, is pretty harmless.
And that's all. And if they were all like him, you wouldn't have to build that wall.
If they all were, but they're not.
Right.
They're not all like him. They are very, very bad, despicable people. Some of them are great people.
They're great.
Like Mario.
Like Mario.
Mario's a
great
guy. Great guy.
Great
guy.
All right. One more, Gina.
All right. Well, every year starts off with a new viral trend, which is always bizarre and kind of gross and, you know, going to grocery stores and licking ice cream and putting it back and all that stupid stuff.
Ugh.
Well, we already have a new one. 2020 ticked off with the news challenge.
The notion, it was kind of funny. We did the Tide Challenge where you basically destroy your own innards.
Yeah.
And then we turned outward with it. Now you're fucking up my Haagen-Dazs. Like, what's going on?
I am nostalgic for the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Yes.
I like this. Let's see how many co-eds we can get in a VW.
Hey, Now you're talking.
Now we're talking.
Or a phone booth.
Or a phone booth.
So the newest challenge on TikTok, this is very unlike what you just said, involves one person lying down and opening their mouth. Milk and cereal are poured in their mouth. The person holds it in their mouth instead of swallowing it, though most of them kind of just spit it up like a volcano. But if you can hold it in your mouth, then someone else gets a spoon and eats it out of your mouth like a bowl. Many people on TikTok took this challenge, including YouTube creator, apparently, Bretman Rock. Here's an example of one that actually worked. I think this will pass your lasagna test, but I don't know. I mean, it's stupid. It's kind of gross.
So somebody, is that a gal?
Yeah, a gal's on the table. A guy is pouring a box of, you know, cornflakes or something into her mouth. She's just laying there.
Then
he's going to grab the lactaid, the milk. She's holding it all in her mouth as best she can. He grabs a spoon. He fishes a couple of flakes out. And
I would like to string together a 2-hour montage of this and every Gallagher concert ever filmed, and then bring it to Ethiopia and go,
"This is what we think of food.
Here's our relationship with your biggest problem."
Yeah.
But nobody likes America anymore. They don't like us, and that's
this
the problem.
Notion that half the world is starving out, yeah, and we're just
playing
looking for
games.
New ways to fucking throw away food.
Yep, that's right.
All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
I'm not bragging dishes. Gina
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, Geico. Do you rent your home? Do you own your home? Well, it's one or the other. And if you do, you work hard and you want to save some money, how about you bundle those policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policies. Good thing. Geico has so much to do. Let's take care of this one, man. Go to geico.com. Get a quote. Just see how much you could save at Geico. That is Geico.com, everybody. Let's see. Cleveland and Indianapolis, me over on February 27th and 28th and 29th, by the way, doing stand-up over there. You can pre-order my book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, and you can get that at Amazon or Barnes & Noble and all that. It's a very good book. We're all it's doing it in the vein of In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks. It's going right back to funny and complaining. You can go to Chassis and get uppity over there. Two S's and a Y. Brian Whitman, The Morning Answer, I listen to every morning.
Thank you.
Weekday morning, 6 to 9 with Jennifer Horn. And that's out here locally at AM 870. But get the app and listen wherever you want, man. That's the new world order. And Tucker Carlson on Fox. I think he's on about 8 p.m. or 5 out here. And until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Brian Whitman, Tucker Carlson, Gina Grad, Paul Bryant saying mahalo.
Hey, buddy, you got hot foods.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Adam Carolla is unprepared all winter long. Those tickets available at adamcarolla.com.